With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Football on off the ball.
Qualifying for World Cup was amazing. The birth of our child, Diego, was for me, it's the best feeling in the world. Nothing would ever top that. Like, but it was important that I came back and refocused and really tried to get this league over the line.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's sports breakfast show.
The good?
Is it a perceptive hard to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
The bad?
I'm scratching my head. Our performances was just lacked that intensity.
And the amber?
Off the Ball's performance rankings.
Alright, so Ireland 13, South Africa 24. Let's go through the key minutes here, shall we? Minute 19, James Ryan. Minute 34, Sam Prendergast. Minute 39, Jack Crowley. Minute 40, Andrew Porter. And then sometime in the second half, Paddy McCarthy. Quite the occasion. Shambolic? No. Chaotic? Yes. Absolutely. Now, was this a drubbing of epic proportions? Does this show exactly where Ireland are? Or can we take some solace in the second half performance that we won 6-5, that Razzie Erasmus was keen to tell us that was exceptional, that in fact the Springboks did not dominate every area. Ireland themselves had an example of dominance throughout the game at some point. However, you'll talk to Irish fans afterwards in the immediate aftermath and now a day and a half later, and they will say, no, this is shocking.
Can we always trust what Razzie says in the immediate aftermath of games? Because, well, listening to Stephen Kitchoff talking to you on Friday, I was struck by, Razzie was really pissed off after Ireland beat us at the World Cup. He was really very angry. But afterwards, you'll remember Razzie made a point of going, oh, this is the best way. This is the route we wanted to go. I was like, and that was the bit where we were like, oh, is it really? He had the opportunity to beat us and you just couldn't do it. That was the bit they clipped up. That was the one that one of the ones that made it into the documentary. I'm like, oh, he says. I think the two little thumbs up at the end. Did you see that? The little to, happy Razzie.
Because the Aviva Stadium was festooned with South African fans throughout the stadium on Saturday evening, and Razzie said he was just celebrating with the nearest Springboks to him.
Take the lap of honour, but like, let's not listen to the patronising. It's like we were annihilated. Don't be taking any crumbs from this.
And how different it could have been, but for the discipline, or maybe the discipline is a red herring in all of this, right? Because so they scored their early try. Then Sasha Feinberg and Gamazulu probably should have gone to the bin for the tackle on Tommy O'Brien. People be screaming out there, probably, definitely, and he wasn't, right? Then, you'll recall, Sam Prendergast missed the penalty.
Yeah, hit the post.
Hit the post, right? And a very gettable penalty, which I think Jack Crowley converted from pretty much the exact same area, but that's neither here nor there. And then,
sorry, from that exact play, we scored the try. It's from that. It's so.
Yeah, hits the post, comes back. That wasn't the plan, though.
No, it wasn't the plan. He misses the kick, but like this.
Not
like,
Andre Conchesca's 1-on-1, so the keeper will save and come back to you.
Bringing it up is clearly like weird.
Oh, well, it's he still made a mistake.
Yeah. But then,
So Prendo's
from that,
like
that passage of play, they score a try.
Prendo was lining up the penalty and goes, "What? Keep an eye out here, lads. This is
this.
It's not. This isn't going to go dead.
Sorry.
All right.
Sorry.
So, It's the post, right? Sam's like, I have this heart.
Wow, weird.
Tyke, you get in there. So Tyke Byrne gets
this is how it's going to be now. We're going to tear ourselves apart as opposed to the enemy, at the gates.
This is what happens with Ireland. How different is the vibe now versus this time last week? You know?
Oh, we all like
this is what rugby. This is what rugby does to people rather than football bringing people together. So Tyke Byrne thinks he equalises, but it's ruled out, Ger. And it's not just ruled out. In spectacular fashion, James Ryan then sees initially red and then upgraded to a 20 initially yellow, upgraded to a 20 minute red. And it's a frightful tackle, to be fair to
scarcely
it.
Scarcely a tackle.
It is. It's an assault. It's hillbillies 2 in the morning.
James Ryan?
Yeah.
Well, it's like I do am I wrong about this, right? So I was looking at the player ratings. What? A lot of sixes and sevens, obviously. Everybody's decided that they want to be part of a viral TikTok trend as opposed to doing some bloody work, you know?
What the fuck?
Like.
What do you mean, like?
What?
What do you mean?
Sixes and sevens.
Yeah, but like, so you think we're being too kind to everyone?
Your kids aren't in the. You don't know
it's
this
a thing, it's a trend. I'm not really sure what it means either.
No, but you think the actual ratings themselves, you think they're too generous?
Can you imagine the football team have been annihilated at home? In a game that they were talking up their chances of winning, right? Yeah. So this is essentially as bad as Armenia. This is like we had less to recommend our performance from the other night. Oh, great rear guard action. The one thing, like the bit that doesn't actually take the.
I don't think it's Armenia.
The world class.
It's if Portugal had beaten as well.
Like 5-0, 6-0.
No, because the difference between Ireland and Portugal in football isn't the same as Ireland.
Yeah, but it's the same for Armenia. The Armenia example is the same.
Ireland-Hungary.
I'll give you Ireland-Hungary.
Yeah, say Hungary had beaten us 5-2 at home.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
5-1.
Yeah, but South Africa, that's an insult.
Say they'd beaten us 5-1 at home and we'd had four players sent off. Would all the players get sixes and sevens?
Yeah.
Oh, well done, lads, you know. Heroic rear guard performance there. Fair play, smack them on the ass. You go about your job, well done. James Ryan got a 3 in the Irish Times.
Yeah, different game.
A 3 after 19 minutes. I'm not good at maths, but 4 times 3 is 12. He would have the greatest game of all time if he was able to rack up 3 out of 10 in the first 20 minutes. Like, whoa, he's on track here for the greatest living performance that any Irish person's ever. It's like, come on, lads. We need a bit more l'équipe, no? I'm just asking questions here. Are we too soft on the rugby team when they put in performances like this in terms of the analysis?
No, I don't think so. Like,
but how is anybody getting a 3 for that?
No, every person
that's
I talk
like a
to,
minus.
Every person I talked to since this game finished is like borderline disgusted at Ireland.
Well, that's very emotional.
But that's what it is, you know.
All right.
There's WhatsApp groups there on Saturday evening, guys. If you don't hold them to account on Monday morning. You know, the public lashing is what people want here. They want some sort of mortification. Continue a pace here. No, South Africa thought they had another try in the 26th minute.
See, when you say, yeah, we won the second half.
That was also ruled out.
Andy Farrell said the same thing in the press conference. Won the second
half.
Yeah,
they're taking a remarkably positive tone here. But I'd excuse the players and coaches and all of this.
Is there a quilter second half performance of the November Internationals prize?
And he hit that trophy.
Is there a little special prize? Oh, well done, lads, you won the second half. I'm like, sorry. The only time I've ever heard anybody else talk about winning the second half was Mick Doyle back in the day, like in the 80s when the Ireland team were absolute shite.
I think when people are mentioning that we won the second half on Saturday, we're just noting it. You know, it's not actually something to celebrate.
Well,
it's a note.
Is it?
It's of interest because it feels like a paddling.
Well, it was a paddling.
You know? And yes, that
they
happened
were like,
in the second half.
Oh yeah, go on there.
So there's a couple of things here, Jared. So this is the first time since 2013 that Ireland have lost twice at the Aviva Stadium in a calendar year. It's kind of hard to believe. And then the other factor about this game particularly, right, and maybe we'll get into this separately, is that the match took 2 hours and 12 minutes to complete.
Oh my God.
Boy, did it.
It was 132 minutes. It ran 52 minutes over.
We're getting punished for something. I don't know what exactly it is yet. I haven't worked it out, but we're getting punished for something.
And the atmosphere, I have to say, the atmosphere in the stadium is very good, like, you know, because last year in the November series, we spent an awful lot of time talking about the lack of crack. But it's good this year. The pre-match stuff is really good, actually, in the Aviva. But I just kept my abiding memory already of Saturday evening is looking up at the scoreboard and the clock has stopped. And it felt like there was about a good, genuine, no exaggeration, 20 minutes in the second half where Ireland were about 5 metres out from their own try line keeping South Africa at bay, where it was scrum, whistle, reset. And it did its very best to kill the atmosphere. But it didn't, to be fair. It was still quite good. Jeez, it was a slog at times, like. It was a distant relation to American football on occasions. The amount of times it stopped.
Yeah.
It was insane.
I saw a lot of people saying, you play Sweet Caroline at home, you deserve to get beat. I'm like, it's difficult to disagree.
They played it in the 72nd minute.
This is nothing. It's not our song. It's nothing to do with us.
But they're not thinking about that. They're just playing something that'll get the crowd up.
You know,
it's like anything. Anything will do, like Spotify, upbeat songs.
In the World Cup in Japan, they had karaoke where they would cut to the crowd and they would have fake mics on the screen. And so people would actually do the Sweet Caroline and they would just do the bit. And it's like, okay, that makes sense. It's karaoke. You're in Japan. But this was just a blast of anodyne, like... Does Sweet Caroline get you up and think, oh,
I could sense people singing along to it.
I really want to, lean into a scrum and fight my way against the best team, the best scrummaging team that we've ever seen in the ground. Yeah, that's getting me up. My blood is pumped.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit detecttheSOS.com today to learn more.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
News Talk do that piece, Reasons to Be Happy, don't they? We scored a try with 13 men. Against the world champions. That was good as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, again.
Dan Sheehan.
Yeah.
And then we went down to 12. Crowdies.
What's the crack with that? Can anyone explain? I should have asked Darrow.
Go on.
Why, like, when you're getting knocked down to 14 and then 13, how do you get knocked down to 12? How is it not addressed that you're kind of going like, all right, lads, let's not be foolish here. How do people keep fouling that you'll keep getting knocked off? Like,
well, it's lucky it wasn't Sam Prendergast doing it, isn't it? That's all I'll say.
Well, Prendergast was for an accumulation, and he just happened to be the one picked.
Yeah, but Crowley wasn't.
Crowley was individual error by him. Porter was kind of more Prendergast, and McCarthy had two offences in a row himself, so had been warned and went off then.
And so, what did you think of Crowley's mistake?
Unbelievably stupid, crazy, like. He was, and he said himself afterwards, he spoke that
fronted up,
yeah, suit on, and he says,
I saw them described as heroic. I'm like, ah, lads,
he says,
this is
I was too eager to impress. Has he been forced to be the way? I don't know, but he was too eager to impress, and he went off as well. When we actually went straight back to 13 men, though, because it was the end of James Ryan's 20-minute red. But we played the first 3 minutes of the second half with 12 men. Kept them out. You know, these are the positives, Ger. Now, I mentioned there Jack Crowley speaking afterwards. We have a few videos here. Do you want to hear the videos now, Ger? Do you want to keep talking?
Oh, yeah, go for it. Yeah. That's your protagonist.
We have Razzie Erasmus, we have Andy Farrell, and then we have a clip from South Africa itself. So we might start with Andy Farrell responding to whether this performance was shambolic.
Is it harsh to say maybe shambolic?
I say chaotic.
Yeah, I won't repeat your word because I think you're wrong. I haven't seen a game like that ever. You think you've seen it all, and I haven't seen a game like that ever. But I suppose, you know, first and foremost, you look at yourself and why things have happened. So we'll do that and make sure that we learn the lessons from that. But my overriding thought of the game is that I'm unbelievably proud. So for you to start the conversation off like that doesn't sit well.
Thoughts?
I would say that we are in a situation at the moment where Razzie is dictating how to manage the media, and it feels a little bit like we aren't playing the same game. We're getting involved with local journalists about phraseology, and it was the same about in the build-up. If you remember, there were questions about the physicality. It was like, oh, you know, you're framing that in such a way that it's going to be like everybody has work-ons, even the world-class players like Doris and Sheehan. And I just think that, like, there needs to be a... If they feel like their front row was penalised in a way that wasn't fair, then you need to come out and fight your corner, as opposed to... Like, they'll do it and, you know, they'll go and have the meeting with World Rugby and show bits where they think their hooker was boring or their prop was boring in the wrong way, and 3 weeks later that'll all... But I've no doubt that the original yellow card wasn't given to the South African 10, partly to do with the fact that there's been so much noise coming from Razzie in a sustained way all the way back to the Lions tour, like the South African Lions tour. That's 6 years ago at this stage. Like, we should be playing the long game here and trying to get on the right side of these referees, and if they think the right side is by being quiet and saying, oh, it wasn't shambolic and it was actually loads for us to get our teeth stuck into there in a positive way. I don't know. It doesn't feel like there was a lot for us to get stuck into. He did say that. So there's two bits of the press conference. There's that bit, and then there's a second bit, which is in the papers today, and there's only tiny bits. But James Ryan is gutted. He's upset in there. He apologised to the group. There was other things that went on within the game as well that we need to address. It's not just one man's doing by far. We're all in this together. But if James Ryan had stayed on his feet, we were about to score a try, because the clear out didn't result in sudden gap appearing out of nowhere. Tyke Byrne gets over in the same passage of play. It's right under the posts. We stick that over. We're 7-5 up. We've weathered a bit of a storm. We've created some width early on through our passing from midfield, and it's going to be an interesting game. Actually, James Ryan sending off is the hinge point where the scrum is completely underpowered as a result of us not having a second row sub on the bench. So suddenly we have essentially a bunch of back rowers playing in second row, and our subs have come on too early, and we're a man down for a quarter of the game because of this one incident with James Ryan. It goes from a 7-5 lead to 5-0, down for 20 minutes, and he's going to be banned for a significant period of time, rightly so. And I think that, like, you know, I think James Ryan needs to take responsibility for that, and, like, he's apologised to them. Oh, how good is that? It's too late. This is elite sport against the best team in the world, and you're always illegal and you make head contact. It's like,
Razzie was looking for clarification afterwards, and what does always illegal mean? So when do you start becoming illegal in anything?
As you fly over Superman like over the ruck.
Now Feinberg and Gamazulu was the same sentiment, but not nowhere near as vicious, but a different outcome.
Yeah, like, should have been a card.
Right? So there's these things, but now the problem is because, like, Matthew Cardy's so prominent, the referee, like, he deserves a rating himself. Like, he was central to that match. And there's so many of those incidents that you're trying to actually get beyond all that, push past all that, and talk about the rugby itself. But every single incident of play that we talk about is almost in correlation with the decision that just had been made.
That wasn't made, you mean?
Was or wasn't.
Okay.
Yeah, the number of yellow cards in a game, the number of decisions that had to be made. It's, chaotic is a fair summation of it.
It was shambolic too. like the.
But what element of it was it? Irish discipline shambolic?
Well, yeah. So Ryan is shambolic. Crowley is shambolic. And the regular, everybody's offside, it seems like. That was what Prendergast got done for. That's a bit shambolic. Like, and I look, I actually don't think they're in a terrible situation at the moment. On balance, there's a bit more depth. There was some positive signs, if blah, 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 right? So all those ifs, and we'll see how they get on against France in Paris on Thursday night in the opening Six Nations game. So we'll see. But I think that they need to tell us that they're holding themselves to account, as opposed to we're really proud of the performance. We're plucky losers again, and that's okay because, you know, we know what the team is capable of. It's like, well, actually, no, that's unacceptable. Our discipline was unacceptable. We failed in the things that we set out to do. I would like to hear a little bit of that language.
Yeah,
I'm sure that is. I would be surprised that wasn't happening behind the scenes.
Well,
he just doesn't want to add to it with the media. So if he goes out and says roughly what he said in the dressing room, I'm sure that's what we continue on then. He doesn't probably want that negativity out there. It's protection, isn't it? You see, yeah, some of the greats in sport do it.
Do you think maybe like do you think that the people who are giving them threes and fours and fives and six and six and a half when they've been absolutely annihilated is like that's the culture around them?
Yeah.
And their own culture is much harder and more strenuous. But, a lot of work on.
Yeah. It's a little bit recent biased by recency. Surely, no? Like, it's not like there's been some big shift from the team that was going in an incredible direction. Is it not just a case whereby
France annihilated us last year at home in the Six Nations?
Yeah, when you get like if they like what I,
it's basically 18 months of bad performances.
Yeah, but you kind of suspect with these things surely that it's a case of if these bigger, considerably bigger countries get their houses in order, that there's no, like, it's not, you're not making excuses for Ireland, but like there's,
well, that's a fatalism, right?
Well, it's not, but it's like so you take England, it's like fairly, we've not talked about them, they've had a fairly impressive,
yeah, they're back, yeah.
But like we were kind of talking about it before, it's like, yeah, there's kind of no excuse not for them to be.
Yeah.
So I don't think Ireland like is kind of.
But sorry, that okay, grand, right? So we're always going to be.
No, you don't aim low. You don't accept that and take it as your fate.
But does that not excuse Ryan Crowley? Does that not excuse mistakes?
I don't know if it'll be excusing mistakes. Like the mistakes were pretty glaring.
Well, then you just have to talk about them. That's all I'm saying.
Like, yeah, no, I don't think
my point is the management team needs to come out and say, well, that was unacceptable.
Would you have them hammer him, like?
Well, when you know
he's distraught.
I would have them. Well, is he distraught?
He said he was, so we can only take him as well.
All right, like, okay, like, fair enough. Like, I just would like a little bit more self-analysis as opposed to, well, we get into the video room, the video room will tell us this, and then we move on with our lives, and there's never actually. This is a come to Jesus moment where either we're going to try and do something and hold ourselves accountable. Maybe they're doing it, right? And maybe, I think Colin's point is that they are doing it. They're just not going to do it for us.
Yeah.
There'll be no performative element to it.
But this is going in the opposite direction of the public opinion right now, right? But is there anything to be said for the fact that they did keep them at bay in the second half? There is something there. Like, so their discipline is shocking. So they need to work on that, right? But it's so difficult to talk about this game and disassociate anything from the discipline.
Yeah, I think that it's possible that South Africa decided to go the way they did with the game, and that actually suited us in keeping the score down, as opposed to if they just decided to cut loose and use their players.
Yeah, that seems strange. Wouldn't Razi want to humiliate?
I don't know. I think maybe Razi has his eye on the World Cup.
I think watching that and watching one team so.
Yeah, I think that's also it.
At a fundamental part of the game where you're like, we're going to embarrass you here.
And they destroyed Ireland for sure,
yeah,
but
I think that was
but in the terms of the scoreline you're looking at, and you know, in the history books you look back on it, when we do these Stephen Kishaf interviews again in 10 years, be like, oh, they beat us there. There's 11 points in that. By memory, that game, was that when all the lads went off? Yeah, but they could have put a statement victory there. Like, that could have been 30 or 40. And at the start of the second half, I thought it was going to go that way.
Hey, say these teams meet again in a World Cup quarterfinal. What's the spread in the advance of that game?
15.
Yeah, they're going to hammer us.
Yeah.
They're just going to do that again.
What did Kishan tell us? He said 12.
I think
one point off.
He was. Yeah. I forgot that.
Yeah. But no, I don't think he accounted for everything that happened. Like, but you know, it's a distraction to actually talk about the game, but it's also front and centre of the Irish problems, like, because discipline has been an issue. Now, the other side of it, you know, by Wednesday this week, we'll be talking about World Rugby and what are we going to do about all these decisions being made, because that, it felt like the game is just one giant TMO discussion.
Talking to some off the ball listeners afterwards, they were making the point, I thought the whole point of scrum dominance was that you get the ball back. It's like a way to restart the game. You get the ball back, you're dominant. It's not like actually you get the ball back and then we punish you again and again and again and again. But it turns out they are the rules, and it is set up that way. If you have a no scrum, no win, as James Ryan always says, we don't have a scrum at the moment. And they're like, again, the bit that's a Lions front row is what Andy Farrell is saying. Well, where was the second row? Where was your plan?
It was a weird way that he was talking about it being world class over at different points.
Our scrum has been world class.
Yeah, which was just a weird one. We were like, Jesus, that's not the moment. It's not the time.
No, so look, my point is, right, you are correctly identifying that he wasn't going to throw his players under the bus. He had been negative about them after the New Zealand game and a bit after the Japan game. And I see somebody in the papers, I can't remember who, making the point that, look, there's 10 weeks to the first Six Nations game. Is he going to send them back to the provinces thinking, well, he doesn't have our backs? He comes out, he has their backs, and suddenly the big Six Nations, and we're not going to be blooding any players in those games. Ryan Baird broke his tibia, apparently, so who knows how long he's going to be out. He's hobbling away, trying to make it. I just think that Razzie is playing chess when it comes to running World Rugby's whatever the guardrails are that World Rugby have laid down for how you manage the media. He always pushes it, and we're never that. We never lead on that. We don't have a load of rugby referees who are at the very top of the game dictating how the rules and laws are going to go. We are passengers with that, and I don't know.
But does that suggest? Do you suggest then that's a? Does that have any correlation with the number of cards Ireland got?
Well, I think that it has a correlation with Sacha Feinberg and Gamazula not getting a card at the start of the game.
They were hit the last two games, right?
They got two permanent red cards.
Like, they are coming off the back in big games.
Well, the Italy game's not a big game.
Well, sorry, but the
France
game.
The France game was a big game. The Italy one got overturned. The France one was completely egregious. What?
So did Tyke Byrne.
My point is that they're way better at causing pressure to be on the referees than we are. We don't engage in that at all. Like, so, and that's not just this window, but Feinberg and Gamazulu should have been carded.
Yeah,
I think everybody agrees with that. Even the most strenuous Bocky fan would be like, yeah, well, let's have a look at it. At least it's a yellow card. Why was it not given?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think these things happen, though. It's not. I don't know if that's proof of a grand plan. That it's like when you have had guys sent off in previous games.
Is it not true that he is always involved? But the French one, you couldn't. Of course, it was a red card. It was like it was egregious. It was the same as James Ryan.
Yeah, no.
When you do something stupid like that, you're going to get a card. But when you do something that's kind of on the fringe,
I know you're talking bigger picture here, but specifically with the Feinberg and Gamazulu incident, I think the TMO said it was mostly chest.
Yeah, he said it just brushed up.
Just a little
and
bit.
And then it felt like Carly was more distracted with the kerfuffle that ensued afterwards, and he was like, "Yeah, look, there's not enough evidence for hit." Early in the game, all right, and then probably even subconsciously thinking, "Geez, the next one of those, now I better act in this."
Yeah, Tommy Ryan might have been lucky/unlucky with.
So Razzie has World Rugby in his pocket. Says, "Sure." Well, here he was enjoying a brew.
He's going to clip that now
after his victory at the weekend.
Good, hands up
for Christian.
How was that beer test?
It's nice. Any beer is nice after a win, especially against a quality team like Ireland, who's totally dominated us since we've been in a group together. So we know that they still, if you take the five games, they're still, I think, 3-2 up against us. So we won't get carried away with this, but yeah, the beer is a little bit sweeter, and we're just thankful that we could manage to beat them here. And it's been a long season for our guys. I know a lot of the guys must go to Japan and URC games and so on, but I also know the whole Leinster team, only two not starting off Leinster in that game. They also have to go into URC, so it worked both ways. But we are proud after a long season to grind through a win against a team like them at home for the first time in, I think, 13 or 14 years. So, tastes okay.
8 years on since obviously we annihilated them, and he was like, okay, my country needs me, I'm coming back. It's been, you have to say, maybe we should have like eased up on them that day, in retrospect.
38-3 that day. And then we went 5 years without playing them at all. Dara there is elaborating on the Feinberg and Gama Zulu incident on Tommy O'Brien. The ref said he wasn't convinced it was a no-arms tackle.
All right.
Anyway, we got to allocate colour here. Unanimous?
South Africa the green.
Amber? That's what Andy Farrell would say.
Work cons.
Yeah, work, loads of work cons. All right. Showing into red there, Dara.
4 out of 10. Sixes and sevens.
Yeah, red hot day. Okay, is that all she wrote for rugby for now? Do you want to say the rest with Quinny and Matt? Or any final words? The length of the game is seriously something that would be great if it was looked at.
Good value for money, obviously. You know, it's like €1 million to go and see the match. At least they stretch it out for...
This fella came in with a pack in with a tray of pints in the 76th minute.
He was dead right.
Yeah.
He was like barely finished by the time the game was over.
There you go. All right, football back. Arsenal. Title one, shorty. So, which I believe is the first time they've beaten Spurs 4 times in a row in the Premier League era. Which is hard to believe. That was also Spurs' first away defeat of the season under Thomas Frank. And yet it feels like the end is nigh for the former Brentford boss.
Do you think so?
Yeah. They've done it before, you know. You said Jack Santini last night. Sure, Nuno is a much more recent example. Just feels like when they get it wrong early doors, they change it. Now, Daniel Levy's gone, of course. There's a slightly different leadership at the top of Tottenham. But I suppose there's two things in football, right? If you're not, if you defend well and you keep teams at bay, at least you have a solid core and you can improve on the attacking options. A bit like Arsenal in the last couple of seasons. Or you can do an Ange Postecoglou. You know, and go all out attack, finish 17th, win a trophy, be memorable. I think the problem with Thomas Frank is he's forgettable. And when you're forgettable at Spurs, you're done.
We're so much harsher about football than we are rugby. Imagine you calling the manager forgettable. You're right, you're spot on. But it's just like, oh my God, it's so harsh.
Well, I really like Thomas Frank. I'm really judging the Spurs fan sentiment when I say that about Thomas Frank. He's a perfectly good manager. I'd love if it did work out for the guy. I'd love if they were patient with him.
I think they will be.
Oh, they're so bad.
Well, like...
So bad.
You do forget as well that it's also the new... It's the post-Daniel Levy era. So maybe they're going to be like Chelsea and just be cycling through managers every 6 or 8 months or 6 or 8 weeks.
Yeah.
I don't know. I suspect they might try and... have a slightly different approach, no?
Possibly. They in Arsenal's box in the game. Their XG, and you wouldn't hear me quoting XG much, but it was 0.07.
Is that bad?
That's all I know. It's bad. And Maris Brosnan's upcoming series, of course, Richarlison.
I was thinking about this. It doesn't count.
Why?
Because it has to matter. It has to potentially matter before the next one.
Oh, his is the big score before the score. Okay, yeah. Well, mine is a different series of totally irrelevant great goals. Because what a finish.
Coming to a VHS near you.
What a finish. I think there's a great page in it. What a finish, like. But you see, that problem with that goal is that it has absolutely nothing to do with coaching.
No.
It's just the footballer. It was good. Who sees the keeper off his line.
Man, he dug too much out of it.
So... But other than that, there was just nothing happening. Like, Arsenal could do kind of what they wanted in this game, and your boy completes his hat-trick. First player to score a hat-trick in the North London Derby in the Premier League.
Really?
Yeah, another hard one.
God almighty.
First to what? Sorry?
Score a hat-trick in the Premier League.
First
eater.
In a North London Derby.
Okay.
Yeah. So, it's Arsenal's to throw away now, because really, 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 you have to say, now we are only the end of November. A lot of football to be played. I'm not a... wholly convinced they're definitely going to win the league, but they probably are, because if their nearest challengers are Chelsea as they are now, they're grand.
That's so true.
So green around there for Arsenal.
Green, like, instead of green.
It is City who will be their nearest challengers as the season goes on. I mean,
heavy.
You saw the Pep was nearly having a scrap with Joe Linton.
And the camera.
And the cameraman.
He's like, you thought he was all zen last week. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, something happened in the international break.
Something set him off.
He had a few days off.
He's turn the wheels against us.
It was, they were, yeah. Look, they were. And you, funny enough, you were saying Eddie Howe had never beaten Guardiola or Newcastle or Man City.
Eddie Howe had never beaten Pep Guardiola.
Never, well.
Well, which is obviously Man City, yeah.
Would chalk
either,
that
would
down.
Would either Bournemouth or Newcastle. Now, 18 games, 16 defeats, 2 draws.
That was a penalty.
The Foden one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus, yeah.
Also, do you know what?
Big deal.
Football does not award a penalty for that challenge, which is crazy. People missed that. Foden got a shot off and was cleared out of it, James Ryan style. Like, and the ref said, I play on your ground.
Could have broken his foot.
Because he got his shot off.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It happens all the time in football. It's, you get your shot off, it's like, oh, you can do what you want to a fella. Is what they're saying without saying it. But that was crazy. So Harvey Barnes, who is eligible to play for Scotland, was asked about it afterwards. Harvey McBarnes. He gets 2. And Newcastle, fairly deserving of it. It was an amazing first half. There was a load of chances and it was scoreless at the break. Newcastle had about 3, at least 3 clear-cut chances in that game. Obviously, you watched the back because it coincided with the South Africa match. But with Man City, they're just too inconsistent. Like, I mean, there's definitely a world, in my view, where City quietly win the league this year. But obviously, that would be in accordance with an Arsenal collapse.
Newcastle are 14th.
And I actually think that, in my head, I thought Newcastle were doing better than they are.
Yeah, me too.
I thought that they kind of win one and they draw one type of vibe and lose the odd game. I was like, are Newcastle good for a win? It's because Nick Foldamada has started well.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh yeah, they're okay. But they're actually not. They're really not.
Well, this could be the start of
it. Is very tight though, isn't
something like? Slightly better, yeah.
Yeah, sure. If Manchester United win tonight, they skyrocket up the table. Like, so, and they're way down the league at the moment. So Arsenal and Green.
From 10th to 4th is what happened.
And this
maybe 5th.
So Man City aren't in the performance rankings, right? But what colour would you give them at the moment?
Oh, they've been red after that result.
Yeah. But I think they're reasonable. They're in reasonable shape. They're certainly in better shape than Liverpool.
Oof. Yeah.
Bloody hell. So, we're on to Liverpool now. We can all agree in a red, but in terms of the discussion points around it, we'll talk with Henry Winter about this. It's weird because at 0-0, they have 3 chances. So they have our 2 Hungarian friends, Dominic Szoboszlai and Milos Kerkez. Alexis McAllister has a chance. And then Forest go ahead and do their business. And they actually have another goal chalked off as well, which is marginal. So it could have been 4. I was listening to the Anfield Rap afterwards and... they said that you'll never walk alone was saying at the end, but saying quite sadly, there's not even anger at the moment to Liverpool supporters. There's an acceptance that this season has already got away from them. But Arne Slot was more objective about it and clinical, saying that it was one of the worst displays he's presided over. And it's hard to argue in terms of scoreline. Of course, this is the performance rankings. They were okay for 20 minutes. They've done that this season where they've been okay for a while in games. But it's a weird one. Look, I definitely thought that Liverpool will be fine this season, fine to the extent of their title challengers to retain their league. I just keep thinking it's going to work out for them because they have such a great squad. But it's just so hard to see it take shape at the moment, you know? To the point where there's Arsenal supporters, you know, well-known influencers online calling for the manager's head, which definitely seems premature to me.
Isak is pretty lucky that Mo Salah has been the tip of the spear when it comes to all of the crap that's coming his way, isn't it?
I was talking with our resident Sparta Phil, and he was saying that they won't give him the ball. So to play in this Liverpool team as a centre forward, out and out striker, you're in big trouble. Like, so when's the last time Salah played with a striker?
Probably Firmino, right?
No, Firmino was a forward, a versatile forward. But I'm talking about a goal scoring. Now I know Isak can go out wide and all that, and he can play a bit of ball with you. But, you know, he's a number 9. True number 9.
Yeah. And I think Firmino was supposed to be just a non-scoring one.
No, I think Firmino dropped deep and was a playmaker who'd score the odd goal. I don't think you wouldn't have Firmino on the team to score your goals. He was a great footballer.
No, because you had Sadio Mane and Mo Salah.
That's what they all complemented each other. And clearly, Isak doesn't complement Salah or vice versa or any of the forwards. So, Isak has been a non-event so far. But I don't think he's helped out by his teammates either. So they're in a bit of a mess. The problem is that they have this mess in front of them, but they have so many options to fix it. They have probably too many options. They don't know what to do.
Well, they want to buy Semenyo now as well.
Yeah. Semenyo, yeah, I mean, exactly. Like, what's Semenyo going to do? Like, he's going to add to the clutter. You know, Mark Gahey now would be a great one. But, like, does Gahey even go to Liverpool now?
I'd say he's thinking about it.
Is, you know, like...
Ah, yeah, you go and you ride to the rescue. Yeah.
Palace are flying it.
I'd wait. I'd be certainly waiting until the summer.
Well, I'll absolutely wait till the summer and take the signing on fee. You know my thoughts on that.
Yeah,
run your contract down, take the money.
Yeah.
Wherever it's coming from.
So,
it's an incredible capitulation. But it will. It'll raise all sorts of questions now, depending on how far it goes. And it's the only interesting thing from the slot point of view is that he risks doing himself damage. Because I'll see it. I can see it. You can see it very quickly being interpreted like, oh, due to overwhelming evidence. It's like, not first season. How much of that was you? I know that's a lot of that's already starting.
Yeah.
But it is. It's amazing how astute he looked not 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of a case of where it's a feasible discussion that he may need to be replaced.
Yeah, I know. Well, in fairness, Salah did say last season that he's enjoying the way that Salah had them playing, which is very different to Klopp. But there was always tension between he and Klopp anyway, particularly at the end. So maybe he just liked the break of it. But
yeah.
No, I mean, Salah looked so accomplished last season. So what do we continue to say last campaign? Wait till he goes on a bad one and see what he's like then.
Turns out that was always you, and you were very prescient with that.
Turns out he is the same candor. Exactly the same.
He's the same fella, you mean?
Yeah, exactly the same. So there, I'd say he's just waiting for this to turn around. I still, they're still not a complete last cause for me. There's still something about them that I think they can fix. They have so many options.
To what end?
To win the Champions League?
I think
to go deep in the Champions League?
I'm talking Champions League qualification at this stage.
Oh, I still think they'll get top five.
Yeah.
I'd be astonished if they didn't.
This run of form is so bad.
I know, but it's so bad, and yet they're what? Like, where? How many points off it are they now? It still can't be that many. It's like they're on 18 points, and they're 2 points off fifth.
Yeah, exactly. And look,
it's nothing.
That's like the thing. It's very, very easy to get stuck in the November trap, like, of thinking that this is it now.
Still haven't drawn a game this season.
It's very weird.
This is it for the rest of the season now. You know, like everything's going to stay the same for the rest of the season. Arsenal are going to be dominant. And everyone else is going to falter. Like, it's not going to stay like this.
No.
The whole campaign.
There will be some mad shifts yet to happen. So I think they'd be mad to get rid of him before the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of comments coming in relation to this. Like, a lot of people have a lot to say. So Dermot Keenan, who's a Liverpool fan, said anyone calling for Slat's head needs to have a look at themselves in the mirror. Hopefully, they can have a run in Europe and get top four. The team's still not over Diogo Jota's passing as well. I mean, that's the other thing, right? So we're all loath to talk about that in depth because it doesn't seem appropriate. And how could we ever prove it?
Yeah, of course. But at the end of the day, like the brutal aspect of it, it'll make no difference. There'll be very little allowance made for that in terms of the general assessment of things or how you know it's such a human tragedy. But it won't come across. That's the brutal reality of it. Like, it just won't, which is very harsh.
Yeah.
But I do think the thing with Slot, the fact of the matter is that, like, maybe there's details out there on this, but it seems very strange to me still the way that you go, like, you've had amazing success last season doing things this certain way, and now we're going to blow it up and do it a completely different way with completely different players. Was that always the plan for him, with him in mind?
Well, do you remember after they won the league, Carragher said they need 5 or 6 new players, and they went and got those 5 or 6 new players, and that's just supposed to be like, I don't think the intention was to change so dramatically. It was to, like, slowly feed them in. It's just that they haven't worked. Ekitike was good at the start, but even that has come off.
He's a disaster.
Liverpool have no central defensive midfielders. That's the main problem, says Barry McGachner. Yet to replace Fabinho.
Did win the league without him.
Yeah.
They looked alright there last year. Gravenberch was like a transformative figure. Remember? It was like, well, what a genius move it was to turn him into the six. Is it just that the analysis happens like he can't do this and this, so do that? Like, the analysis is a very high level these days. We're going to talk about Aston Villa, but Morgan Rogers, after he scores the goal, goes and celebrates with Nanny McPhee on the sideline. Apparently, I was listening to the radio commentary and then ran in to check the goal on telly. Mm-hmm. They were like, there's some analysis that the wall jumps a bit early. He waits, they jump, he hits it over their head into, like, to get it up and down.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. So the analysis is obviously very high end. If you can pick problems with Liverpool's midfield, and if McAllister's a little bit off, which he is, then it doesn't take that much for these teams.
No.
It doesn't.
There's very few shy teams anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And they're all ready and they're all gearing up for it. But it's 100%.
All right, Liverpool in red, and then we'll fly through the rest. We'll literally just give these lads a colour. So Aston Villa, or Aston Villa Football Club. You want to take a little lap?
I think since the Sunderland game, it's 10 wins and 13 in all competitions.
Wow.
Brentford beat them on penalties. Liverpool beat them, which now looks like one of the weirdest results of the season. And there was one other game that they've lost. Oh, the bad Dutch team. Go Ahead Eagles?
Yeah.
Beat them in the Europa League. But they've just... And they haven't actually been great. There's all these situations where... And they still have loads of room to progress. Like if Ollie Watkins was able to score, imagine they'd start winning these games well.
All right, Aston Villa in green for sure. Evan Ferguson too, he can join them there. His first club goal in over a year. As Roma beat Cremonese. Jamie Vardy's Cremonese. Good finish. Lovely finish. Incidentally, Troy Parrott scored a lovely consolation for AZ Alkmaar. And Finazaz helped himself to a couple. Southampton hammered Charlton. Jason Lumley got sent off for West Brom. It all happened with our Irish heroes. We'll talk about it tomorrow in the return of the green scene with Matthew Brennan. So Evan Ferguson's a green. And then the club GAA action over the weekend. Brian Hayes, Cork hurling star Brian Hayes, scored 3-3 in the Munster football semi-final as the Bears beat Erog of Ennis.
Cork's best footballer is a hurler.
Possibly. And Jimmy Barry Murphy laments the fact that there are no dual players anymore. And I would too. And I also want to note St. Martin's of Wexford as well, who were who were into the Leinster hurling final after beating Nace. Sure. And they obviously, everyone we just mentioned there, firmly in the green. A very positive performance rankings on this
exceptions.
Monday morning.
Off the Ball's performance rankings.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's Sports Breakfast Show.